Let's spend some time discussing the different types of accounts. Regular accounts, tax-qualified accounts, most notably retirement accounts, and annuities. Why? Because you got to put your money somewhere, right? Slide number 2. This graphic is something I created. I hope it doesn't look too stupid, but they're supposed to be bins or buckets or bolsas, containers, because people too often confuse a Roth IRA or a 401k with the investment that is contained inside the Roth IRA or the 401k. See, the Roth IRA is not the investment. The Roth IRA is just the type of account that the investment resides in. And there are two major types of accounts, what the IRS calls taxable accounts, and then what the IRS calls tax-qualified accounts. Now, they're not just retirement accounts. There's educational savings accounts. There's medical savings accounts. There are different types of tax-qualified accounts. But the main one that is discussed is the retirement account. And there are many different types of retirement accounts. But let's first take a look at the taxable accounts. The taxable accounts are also called regular accounts, and in a taxable account, there are no limits to how much money you can put in, there are no limits on the different types of investments, and every year, whatever cash you receive through dividends or interest payments or rent or capital gains or losses, you will need to pay taxes. Every year. Now you'll get normally a 1099 that describes how much you earned in interest or how much you earned in dividends and the like. There are different types of 1099s. 1099 div and 1099 int. But you'll have to pay taxes on those every year. Whereas, as we'll see with the retirement account, that those taxes will either be deferred or they will be eliminated. But first, notice that there are all the different types of investments that we've discussed this semester placed that can be placed. I'm not saying you should place these in. I hope you'll stay far away from options and futures. I don't think margining and shorting are that great a deal, but that's up to you. There is no limit to what you can put inside a taxable account. Notice over here, though, the Congress has said, no. You cannot put certain very risky things into your Roth IRA or your traditional IRA or your 401k. Now, you notice I left out precious metals, gold. The truth is you can put gold into a retirement account, but there's certain restrictions. It has to be American gold and eagle coins. I'm not sure. But, of course, with a mutual fund, you can buy gold. So you don't have to worry about keeping track of where those coins are. So let's take a look at the retirement account, the tax-qualified account. Strict limitations on contributions, and we'll show what they are for 2015 in just a few slides. As we just discussed, there are strict limitations on investment types. The Congress is saying, look, stocks and mutual funds that invest in stocks are risky enough, folks. This is your retirement account. You don't want to be doing things that are too risky. Actually, there is one type of option that you could sneak into your retirement account. It's the covered call. And if you studied Chapter 15 in detail, you'll remember that the covered call was a way to sell an option such that you already have the stock, so you could just turn around and deliver the stock in case somebody called it away from you. So let's read at the bottom. Although there are many subtle and not so subtle differences, the major differences are how they are taxed by the IRS, how much money you can contribute, and what you can have in the account. So let us now turn our attention to the various types of retirement accounts, because chances are, as we discussed in Chapter 4, when you get out there into the benevolent machine and you are trading your life for your paycheck for the rent, the mortgage payment, the orthodontia, the car payment, the insurance, the cell phone, the list goes on and on, you are going to be offered an employee-sponsored retirement account, such as a 401k or a 403b. And if not, you might set up your own. If you're self-employed or maybe your company doesn't have it, you'll have a traditional IRA or a simple or a SEP IRA or your own Roth IRA. Roth IRA is very cool. And they come in two different flavors. Pre-tax, where you pay taxes later and you get a tax break now. Or post-tax, where you pay the taxes now, but you get a tax break, a great tax break, later. So, let's take a look on slide 4 with the most popular personal retirement plan, the individual retirement arrangement. What? I thought it was individual retirement account. Well, that's what everybody calls it, folks, but the real term, the legal term, is individual retirement arrangement. And that's what the IRS will call it because they're sticklers for the actual names. But everybody else refer to it as individual retirement account. Anybody with earned income can contribute to a traditional IRA. Now, there's a bit of a confusion regarding these things, of course, because the tax code is so complicated. But no, there's no limit on your contributions. There is with a Roth, but there really isn't with a Roth, and we'll discuss that later. But if you have a retirement plan at your employment and you make over a certain amount, you may not be able to tax deduct. You might not be able to reduce your taxes now. You can still contribute, but they might be what are called after-tax deductions, not pre-tax deductions. And in which case, then you have to keep track of how much was after-tax and how much was pre-tax. Because if you don't, when you go to take it out, the IRS will assume it's all pre-tax. So you got to be careful. You have to keep track of what they call your basis, which I think is a dumb name. Why don't they just call it the amount that's pre-tax and the amount that's post-tax? No. You have to keep track of how much is post-tax so you don't get charged again. The contribution limits are increasing with inflation, and your investment grows tax-deferred. You pay taxes on the money as you withdraw it once you're retired. Well, that makes sense. You know, you didn't get taxed on the way in. You get taxed on the way out. And normally, for most individuals, this will be 59 and a half years of age. Now, there is a way you can get to it earlier, but we won't go into that. Talk to your CPA or contact me. It's not that hard. You just tell the IRS, hey, I'm 56. I want to retire now. And they say, okay, cool. You don't have to pay the penalty that you normally would have to pay if you took it out before 59 and a half. But then there are certain restrictions that you have to follow that the IRS will tell you. And once you hit 70 and a half, you must start taking the money out. Now, I don't know why they do this to the elderly, because I don't think it's a very nice thing to do. But if you don't take it out, the penalties are very severe, unbelievably so. So if you know anybody's in that ship, make sure they take that money out, because they don't want to get hit with those penalties. And then the IRA on slide number 5 has many different cousins and siblings and relatives, aunts and uncles. The 401k is the employer-sponsored plan at a business. The 403b, the 457, the 401a, those are through public organizations such as school districts, hospitals, and the like. The SEP IRA, the Simple IRA, the Solo 401k, the SARSEP, the KEO. I love that word, KEO. It reminds me of the Wizard of Oz. Yo, yo. Anyway, these things were originally designed for self-employed individuals or very small businesses. The best one, I think, for businesses is the Simple IRA. Very easy to do, no outrageous paperwork and no fines if things don't go the way they're supposed to go. For example, in a 401k, if you have a business and only the wealthy, only the well-paid employees partake of it, then the IRS can come in and actually negate the plan and say it's top-heavy. Oh, my goodness. So, in other words, you got to get all your employees to contribute. With a simple, you don't have to worry about that. And then the last the last item here is the Roth. The Roth is relatively new, 1998, and it uses post-tax contributions. We'll see the difference. It's actually quite cool in my humble opinion. And now there are Roth 401ks and Roth 403bs. And we put those in quotes because the IRS doesn't call them that, but that's what everybody else calls them. Slide number 6. So here's an example. You work at a company that has a 401k, and you contribute via your paycheck $100. Now, the next three numbers, on slide 6, $25, $8, and $33, the sum of those two, depend on your tax bracket. And once you've joined the benevolent machine and making a decent salary, it's likely that you'll be in the 25% tax bracket. Maybe more, maybe less. But let's say we're in the 25% tax bracket. And what that means is if we have $100 that comes out of our paycheck, the feds will give us a $25 subsidy. And the state of California will give us a $8 subsidy. Well, now, do they write you a check? No. All they do is just take 25 fewer dollars out of your paycheck to send to the IRS and 8 fewer dollars out of your paycheck to send to the state of California's franchise tax board. So you are essentially getting a $33 government subsidy. You see your take-home pay only reduced by $67, but the whole $100 goes into your account. What a deal! You get $100 worth of investments for $67. Plus, we're not even taking into account a match that your employer may give you. They don't have to, but they may give you, $50 for every $100 you put in, or $100. And they might sometimes give you $25, but I haven't seen that too often. It's either $50 or $100, 50 cents on the dollar, $100. Think about that, folks, a 50% return on your money in one day. And there are many people who don't take advantage of the max. The match. There are many people who don't take advantage of the match. And you wonder what these people are thinking. Obviously not too much. So think about that, folks. You get $100 or maybe $150 or maybe $200 worth of investments for only $67. Okay, all right, what's the catch? There's always a catch, right? Well, it's actually not that bad. You pay income tax on any amounts withdrawn in retirement. It's tax deferred. But people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket. And if you're not, congratulations. I mean, if you're in retirement and you're taking gobs of money out of your retirement accounts because you are totally loaded, and you could be if you start early, I don't feel so sorry for you. In fact, I wish that upon you. It is my sincerest desire that all my students and my clients and myself have this horrible champagne problem in our elder years. Oh dear, what shall we do? We're taking too much money out of our retirement accounts and paying higher taxes. It's a rough life. And if you withdraw the funds before retirement, they're going to make you pay the tax, the income tax. Well, that makes sense. You didn't pay it on the way in. But they're also going to hit you with a 10% penalty. They don't call it a penalty. The IRS calls it an additional tax. But everybody else calls it a penalty. But there are exceptions. If you're using the money to buy a first-time home buyer for your first home, which means you haven't owned a home within 2 years, if you're using it for higher education or medical disability or financial hardship. Now, the IRS is supposedly trickier, and it's difficult to get them to approve a financial hardship. But you still have to pay the income tax. You just don't have to pay the 10% penalty. So many people will raid their retirement accounts to buy their first home, which is a good thing, folks, in my humble opinion, because you can't live in a 401k, you can't live in a traditional IRA, but you can live in a home, and it's real estate's an investment in and of itself, and you get to live in it too. Slide number 8. Now, what about the post-tax contributions? What about the Roth IRA, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b? Well, you put $100 into a Roth IRA, what do you get from the feds? What do you get from the state of California? Nothing. They don't give you any help. And doesn't match either, usually. I mean, if your own Roth IRA, no. But if it's a Roth 401k or a Roth 403b, they may match. But we're not going to consider that for now. You see $100 taken out of your disposable income. You put in $100 and you see $100. So you're paying $100 to get $100. And you're saying, well, why would I contribute to a Roth IRA when the others are going to give me $100 for $67? Well, here's your answer. Because people are going to ask you, why do you contribute to a Roth IRA? Because you're going to do it, right? Yeah, I think you're going to do it. Slide number 9. The answer is because a Roth IRA is so cool, folks. That's the answer. Tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. No other investment choice comes close, in my humble opinion. There are situations that you could torture to see that you would have done better to put the money in a pre-tax. And some people say, don't trust them. Don't trust the bums in Congress because they'll find a way to tax you on the way out even though they taxed you on the way in. I don't know. We'll see. I think they're going to get rid of them. I think after another 20 years or so, they're going to say, no more Roth IRA. You can keep what you have, but because their mouths are going to be watering in Congress and at the state level, all that money in Roth IRAs, and they can't touch it. Plus, another very cool thing about Roth IRAs is the contributions are yours. You already paid tax on the contributions, so you can withdraw the contributions at any time with no penalty. Now, not the earnings. If you take the earnings, at first you take the contributions out. And then if you take the earnings out, they're going to hit you with the 10% additional tax, plus you have to pay income tax on it. So, no, you don't get to take the earnings out without that being taxed. And if it's for one of the exceptions, you don't have to pay the 10% penalty. But if it's not, then you have to pay the penalty. So this makes the Roth IRA also an excellent intermediate term investment account. A wonderful way to purchase a home or other high-tech item. And I really think they're great for college expenses, especially for people on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. Because for them, it's better for them to fund their own retirement than it is to put money into an educational savings plan. Why? For various reasons. One, they don't use the money in a Roth IRA for financial aid calculations. Indeed, think about that, folks. If you're very well off, you're probably not going to get financial aid. Oh, well. But if you're at the lower end of the middle part of the socioeconomic spectrum, you're probably going to get some type of financial aid. Well, whatever's in a Roth IRA reduces that. I mean, whatever's in an educational side. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Whatever is in an educational savings account, such as they're called 529 plans, it reduces that ability. Whereas the Roth, they don't ask you. They didn't ask you what was on the FAFSA form when you did the FAFSA form. It's not the FAFSA form. People say FAFSA, but it's FAFSA. Subform. When you filled that out, they didn't ask what was in your 401k. They didn't ask what's in your Roth IRA. So I think that's cool. Plus, if you use money from a 529 plan, then they take away the ability to use the tax credits, such as the HOPE and the Lifelong Learning Tax Credits. thanks a lot, guys. You know, here you are. So when people come up to me and say, should I put money away into, say, educational savings account? I say, look, have you funded your 401k? Have you funded your Roth IRA yet? Do that first. And then if you have extra money lying around, okay, no problem. And the truth is, dear students, retirement accounts, if you are prudent, if you are consistent, if you don't panic, in other words, if you follow the precepts and concepts and skills and techniques that we push in this class, that we cover in this class, you have the potential to have an awesome retirement income for yourself. Better than anything that you're in the past that your employers would give you as a pension. But if you don't contribute, or if you chase after every next big thing only to watch it crumble into dust, you have the potential to, yes, I don't want to go there. Slide number 10. But here's where it gets really strange, dear students. The Roth IRA is not for everyone. There are limitations on Roth IRA contributions. Let's see if you can follow me on this, on slide number 10. Only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $116,000 or less, and married couples with an adjusted gross income of $183,000 or less in tax year 2015, can fully contribute to a Roth IRA. After those numbers, it starts to phase out your ability to contribute. And if you don't qualify, congratulations. I don't feel so sorry for you. But the truth is, you can go ahead and contribute to the Roth IRA anyway. And if you find that you've made over this limit, or you knew you were going to go over that limit, you can then recharacterize the contributions into a traditional IRA, which does not have the same limitations, and then convert the traditional IRA back to the Roth IRA. You do it on the very same day with the paperwork. You submit all the paperwork on the same day to recharacterize, that's the verb the IRS uses, I didn't make it up, recharacterize your contributions into the traditional IRA, which does not have any limitations on income. And then you can do it before you file your taxes, or you can actually do it after you file your taxes. You have until October 15th of the year afterwards. And then you convert it immediately back into the Roth. I know, who voted for these bozos? Oh yeah, we did. Is the tax system broken? Yes, the tax system is broken. Everyone can agree on that. How do we fix the tax system? Nobody can agree on that now, so don't hold your breath. Slide number 11. Here is the IRA contribution limit for 2015. And you have until April 15th of the next year to put in the maximum amount. Plus, even if your spouse is not working, you can contribute on behalf of your spouse. Now, it's in their name. Don't worry, because you're married, you have claims to each other's retirement accounts. Assuming you've made the $5,500 for you and the $5,500 for him or her. And then if you're 50 or over, you get to add $1,000. Now, these numbers go up with inflation, but they go up in $500 increments. So it might take, you know, several years for it to go up to the next level. And then on slide 12, we see the one this past year between 2014 and 15, we see that the limits have gone up in both cases for the folks under 50 and then for folks over 50. In 2015, you are now able to put $18,000 into a 401k or 403b or a 457 or a 401a, whatever is available. And if you're 50 or over, you go up to $24,000. Think about that, dear students. Let's say that you're married and you're both working and making a pretty good salary, and you could live off of one person's salary. You could take the other person's salary, take $18,000 of that and put it in a 401k. Now, if you're in your 20s and you do that for 5 years, you would never have to put another dime into your retirement account. You could just let it sit for 30 years, and when you woke up when you're 62, you'd say, wow. Assuming, you know, the world doesn't end. Now, there's a loophole in the law, and when I first heard this, I didn't believe it. And it took me a while to find the right person at the IRS who confirmed that it's true. And now it's common knowledge amongst people in the public sector. But if your employer creates a 403B and a 457, you can double contribute. You can contribute $18,000 into the 403B and the $18,000 into 457. And, of course, if you're 50 or over, that's $24,000 and $24,000. Which is, yes, that's a significant chunk of change to be putting away in your retirement accounts and then letting it sit, you know, kissing it and waving goodbye to it and then coming back to you when you retire. Very, very cool. Slide 13. Plus, if you're at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, you may even be entitled to a tax credit for contributing to retirement accounts. And tax credits are very, very cool, folks. They reduce our taxes dollar for dollar. And these are not, you know, trivial sums. I mean, if you're single, $30,500 in 2015, that's adjusted gross income. You know, that's before you have taken away the standard deduction and the personal exemptions. Married, $61,000. And then head of household somewhere in between. So if you do your own taxes, don't forget this. If you have someone do them for you, make sure you remind them to put money away in a retirement account. Make sure you remind them that you put that money away so they don't miss that. And tax programs like Tax Act and Tax Slayer and TurboTax and H&R Blockheads, they handle these pretty darn well. They say, oh, yeah, you put money away into a Roth IRA. You're entitled to $300 back on your taxes. Very, very cool. And now, the 401k Roth, the Roth 403b. Well, notice we put quotes around them because that's not what the IRS calls them. They just call them 401ks and 403bs with the ability to put after-tax dollars in. Your employer does not have to offer this option. It's more, you know, more paperwork, more busy work for them. But it's like a Roth IRA in that whatever money you put in when you go to pull it out is now non-taxable. But the problem occurs if your employer matches any of your money because that's still pre-tax. Plus, if you put pre-tax and post-tax, just like the traditional IRA with the non-deductible contributions, you have to keep track of how much was post-tax and how much was pre-tax, because if you don't, and you don't, they call it the basis, if you don't keep track of that, the IRS can come in and say, oh, it's all taxable. Now, this is a great option for those people who don't need the tax break now. That's people at the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder. But I prefer the Roth IRA. It's just cleaner. You don't have to keep track of all that paperwork. However, if your employer matches your contributions and you're in the lower end, then it's a no-brainer. You know, pick the Roth 401k, pick the Roth 403b, because that match, 50% return, 100% return on your investment in one day, nobody's going to offer you that, except your employer. And the reason they do it is because they don't want to have a pension plan anymore. They want you to take care of your own pension. Cool. Slide 15. All right, okay, let's talk about annuities. I hate these things, folks, and there are a lot of people like me who hate them, and then there's a lot of people say, oh, you don't understand, they're wonderful, they're fabulous. You know, they're the annuity salesmen. And I could sell them. I could get the huge commissions that annuity salespeople get. In fact, I have a link on the website to show you what kind of things they send you in the mail if you're a life insurance agent trying to get you to sell these things. They'll send you on a 7-day Caribbean cruise. What's an annuity? An annuity is a life insurance product designed to provide a guaranteed income. Now, the most popular is the life income option. For as long as you live, little lady, we'll send you money. Well, the problem is they're not stupid. They know how long you're going to live, and they price the darn things accordingly. The amount you get is based on which of the options you pick, 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years, or the very popular life income option, how much you've contributed, how well your annuity investments have performed over time, and I should say how old you are, too. I should put that in there. And there are basically two flavors. There are more than that, but there's the fixed annuity, which invests mostly in bonds. You don't see that. They do it for you. And then there's the variable annuity, where you get to choose mutual funds inside the annuity. Sounds cool, right? I get to invest in mutual funds. The insurance company is charging you on top of what? Yeah. Okay, slide number 15. Here we are. Let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages. The advantages are that annuities sort of live in both worlds. You can fund them with retirement account dollars, pre-tax dollars, or you can fund them with after-tax dollars. And unlike the 401k, the Roth IRA, there's no limit on your contributions. You could put $200,000 into an annuity, which is why the salespeople love these things, because the commission on that is, that's several boat payments. The interest earned is tax-deferred. Well, okay, you pay taxes on any pre-tax annuity contributions and all tax-deferred earnings as you withdraw them in retirement. And luckily for you, you don't have to worry about the basis. The insurance company takes care of that for you normally. And with other retirement plans, when you retire, you are likely in a lower income tax bracket. So these things sound great. You know, they really sound like the best of both worlds. No income option, no limit on contributions, and yet I get to defer taxes. What's the downside? Very high fees, folks. The fees in these things are just outrageous. Now, sure, if you're a life insurance agent, please show me one with very low fees. I'd love to see it. I love it when they say, this one doesn't have any fees. Wrong. You know, it's a fixed annuity, so they're not legally required to show you what their fees are, unlike the variable annuities, because they have mutual funds inside them. Because of the Investment Company of Act of 1940, the Securities Exchange Commission says you have to show people a prospectus, and you have to show them how much you're charging them. So the mutual fund charges you 1 or 2%, depending on the mutual fund, some less, some more. And then the insurance company charges you another 1.5% up to 3% every year. Cha-ching! Yeah, I don't like these things. And I'd be happy, I'd be love if somebody were to show me a really good one that was in the best interest of the clients, and I might even sell it, or I might even buy one. But so far, no. Yeah, never trust an insurance company with your investment, folks. And come on, guys, screw me. I mean, not screw me. Sue me. Screw me. They are screwing me. My apologies. At Southwestern Community College, we are being screwed by Nationwide. And I've told them to their face, and I've told them in these presentations, and I've showed them how they're screwing us, and they kind of go, well, we have to be paid too, you know. I'm like, okay, enough of my rant. Slide number 17. To review, there are regular accounts where there are no contribution limits, no limits on what you can put into the account, and you pay taxes every year. There are retirement accounts that are either pre-tax, where you get a tax break now, and your taxes are deferred and paid in retirement, or post-tax retirement contributions where you pay taxes now and then you don't pay taxes later on in retirement. Very, very cool. And then there are annuities with high fees and tax-deferred earnings. Cool? And in the 121 class, when we get to Chapter 14, we discuss this in detail. So if you'd like to get some more information, essentially the same, what we just covered, you could go to Business 121 and look for Chapter 14. And, of course, if you have any questions whatsoever, contact me, go online to the discussion boards, and we can talk further. Because I can talk about this a whole lot longer than most people would ever want to listen. See ya!